Welcome to the 91st episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm Quizmaster Lee, joined as always by the physically distant but socially present.
Mark Davis.
Quizmaster Mark Davis. Good morning, Mark.
Yes. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine, you know, considering.
Good.
How are you doing?
I am hanging in there.
Right on. Yeah.
It's been a long week, but it's doing okay.
Strange times. We as Quizmasters moving our business online this week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing the streaming thing.
Yeah. If not for, you know, for the people, for our own sanity to, you know, relegate some form of normalcy.
We can't help ourselves. We got to bring the trivia.
Yeah, a lot of people don't understand, like, as a musician, you know, and it's the same thing with, I know, a lot of athletes. People go, oh, well, you know, you have enough money, you can just stop. And they're like, it's not about the money. It's about the desire to do it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, we love what we do, which is why we do what we do. So, yeah, it feels good. I saw that you had made plans to, you know, well, I saw that Elise in Dallas, who we're going to be having on soon, had made plans to move their stuff digitally.
Yep.
And then you followed suit. And I wasn't even going to bother asking Greg, but Greg actually came to me and asked about doing it. And, you know, I know a lot of places around, it seems, have been doing it, but locally we've had loads of musicians and loads of local venues have virtual concerts and things like that to, you know, to keep, like I said, some kind of like normal, you know, some kind of normalcy going on.
Yes. The arts must go on.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So
we had Claire from the Free Coaster. She did a Nice Guys Pizza live concert, and Kyle Ann, by the time of this airing, will have done one on Saturday. And you, of course, doing Nice Guys Pizza trivia through Zoom, right? That's the app that you were using?
I did, yeah.
Well, how'd you feel about how that went?
It went well. I mean, I don't think there's, you know, I don't think there's any perfect platform. I think Zoom is about as good as we were going to get. Elise in Dallas did theirs through Facebook. Which had its troubles as far as lagging and video stuff.
I think they got disconnected a few times. And
exactly, yeah.
So maintaining players in that sense is hard because you're really relying on them to come back and find the video when it starts back up, it seems.
Right. And you know, every time waiting to make sure everybody got back on. Mm-hmm. You had done yours through Twitch.
Right.
Which, how do you feel about that?
I like it. It's a huge learning curve. And, you know, thankfully, I already have a lot of equipment and stuff to kind of ease onto that and do some fun stuff that is part of the norm on Twitch, like having a green screen. So, you know, it took me a little bit to kind of learn the software. I've been using Streamlabs OBS for that. And then there's a extension for Twitch called QuizKit that I've been using to run trivia on Twitch, which kind of uses a BuzzTime style first answer, first correct answer, most points, latest, last wrong answer, least amount of points, or most taken from you, rather.
Right.
And so, you know, it took me a few nights, long nights of studying and learning how to do that. And even so, I ran into a lot of technical difficulties, just kind of getting my bearings going. For example, I thought it'd be cute to have some video going on behind me, you know, from Palace, where I usually yes. host trivia. And I couldn't tell, but my viewers on the stream could tell that the audio was still on the video. And it was on a loop, and it was also slowed down to like 1%. So there was this undercurrent of demonic. Cooking the entire time, which I couldn't hear in my monitors. And I was playing Riders of the Storm by The Doors, which has thunder sound effects. So people were like, what's that like deep noise? And I'm like, oh, it's just the thunder. It's just the thunder from The Doors, not realizing it. So some technical difficulties. Also, I had some quizzes stored that got deleted, and there were some default quizzes that were used that repeated questions. And I don't think that was a very fun time for the players. But I feel like with each stream, we're going to, you know, get better at presenting the questions, and it's going to feel more like our typical live experience as we move forward. So,
yeah, I did like a good deal about Twitch and how you had done it. You know, I feel like in a lot of respects, Twitch is a very good avenue to use, though I don't like, you know, ABCD trivia.
Right.
The fact that that's built in, I mean, makes it so handy. You know, it's definitely a good setup. Zoom I liked because everybody could see each other.
Yeah, that was interesting. It had a very strong community vibe to it,
which I really liked. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, now, you know, you with Twitch had the automatic point gathering system.
Yes,
I had Jamie
nice.
Carmichael. I had Jamie 6 feet from me, tallying scores fervently with pieces of paper and a pen.
Right.
And losing his mind.
He denied any use of a computer to assist him in the addition of these scores, which I thought was a bold move. I don't know if that's the teacher in him or what.
You know, and I told him I've got that tablet that automatically, you know, tabulates the scores when you put the numbers in, but he's just old school like that, you know?
You feel that? That's pride fucking with you.
Fuck pride.
Yep.
But yeah, I thought it went really well. It was a lot of fun. We'll be doing it again this Wednesday. We had a couple of no nonsense listeners on.
Yeah.
Yours and mine. Ian.
Mm-hmm.
Mondu.
Yep.
It
was cool to meet all them virtually.
Yeah, and there were a couple of others that said they were interested but weren't able to make it, so maybe they can make it to yours or mine this week. You'll be doing yours on Monday and Thursday as usual.
That's right. twitch.tv/no-nonsense-trivia.
And I will maybe we'll put the link to mine on the show notes.
Absolutely.
In case anyone's interested. And yeah, so
and
you'll
be
virtually
on Wednesday
be able to play with us. Yes. At 8, we're doing it nice and early for all of you essential workers out there that have to work in the morning. So
that's great. Yeah, we'll keep you listeners posted on the going-ons on that, and if we have any other recommendations or anything else pops up trivia-related that we get involved with online as we're stuck in our homes. Mark, how about we hit our weekly wrap-up?
That sounds good to me.
Okay, on Monday, March 23rd, we held No Nonsense Trivia on Twitch. Very interesting, as we just described. Had about 15 teams. Unfortunately, I lost the scores to that, but I do have, I remember one winner was H-Bomb and Friends. They had a victory. That is one of the players from Left of Sanity, our teams from last summer that was out and about quite a bit. I think Elise also got one of the quizzes as well under Shell Games Entertainment. Mark, how did your teams do on Wednesday night at your virtual Nice Guys Pizza Trivia?
They did well. Team Targus won first and second round. It's pretty interesting. They almost got a perfect round the first round. Jamie had said they got a perfect round. He was skeptical. They came out and told us that they got one of the questions wrong. They were honest and told us that they got one of the questions wrong. So we really, really appreciated that. It also gave them a little bit of, lent them a little bit of credence that they, weren't just sitting there cheating. They won the first and second round, but the last round was Michael Clorox, Michael C., his wife Abby, also a no-no listener, and Brett and Gina, and all of their children, I guess, combining together for a super team to win the grand prize of the $25 gift card.
Voltron style.
Yes.
Good. All right, and then on Thursday, we were back on Twitch for another No Nonsense Trivia. We had Rack the Cougars, our winning team, with 104,900 points. I don't usually score them that high, but that's the QuizKit scoring method. And then Grantastic Glenn, 161,000 points. And our third quiz, we're doing three quizzes per evening on that. Daddy Wants Grits, that would be Seth, of course, our friend from the No-No, yes. And the Shy Tune is with 126,606 points. I guess it's so many points because it's really down to the time that you enter your answer. So there has to be like a lot of variation there within the 20-second period to get that going.
So, yeah, that taking points away if you get it wrong really hurts too.
Yeah, it's such a different format than what I'm used to, but it seems to be fun. I enjoy hosting it. It's like almost like I don't know. Maybe for a musician, you're used to playing in like, you know, rock groups, and then a hip hop artist comes to you and says, "I want to do like live drums," and you're like, "Well, I'm used to doing it this one way, but this is fun and interesting. But now I need to learn, you know, some of these other rhythms, you know, or something like that."
I gotcha.
Yeah. But congratulations to all of our winning teams this week, and thanks all for quizzing. If you want to play No Nonsense Trivia in the coming weeks, you can do so by visiting twitch.tv/No Nonsense Trivia, where we will be streaming on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern. Until further notice, make sure you follow us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, and Twitch to stay updated on when we stream our quizzes and when our live quiz schedule resumes. That's No Nonsense Trivia on your social networks. And also, don't forget, you can play Nice Guys Pizza Trivia virtually with Quizmaster Mark Davis on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Just find the link in the show notes this episode or on the Nice Guys Pizza Facebook page. Join us. Won't you?
We hit the same note at first.
I couldn't hear you at all, so that'll be interesting.
Oh, well, perfect.
Mix coming soon. I can't wait.
It's a good time.
All right.
How do you feel about taking a break?
I feel good about it.
I cut you off. This lag is going to be the death of us.
I'm sure it's entertaining for our listeners. Let's take a break, though.
Absolutely. Okay.
And then we'll be back.
Bye-bye.
It's time for round one of the 91st episode of No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. Mark, if you would do the honors of asking me a question, I'm ready.
I'd love to. Here you go. In what year did the Bay of Pigs invasion take place?
Okay. So that was during Kennedy's presidency. I don't know if it happened before the moon landing or after the moon landing. The moon landing, 1969. So it's, and I'm, he, let's see here. Was that his first year? I guess I could do the math real quick in my head and try and work backwards to see what the election year is, but that would be a strong start. Let's say it happened after. No. Hold on. 1969 is when it happened. So that means that he announced it much earlier than that. I almost played myself. All right. So let's say, I'm guessing it's going to be like 66, 67, 1967. Why does that feel right? Because I have no idea. I'm not sure. I'm going to go with it, though. 1967. I don't really have a lot of other information to help me out there.
I'm sorry. The correct answer is 1961.
Ooh, okay. So a little bit earlier.
1961. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Space Race took a little longer than the math that I just did in my head, I guess.
Yeah, 61. I think by 69, he was pretty well dead.
Yeah. I'm not sure the date. What was the date on that?
The day that he was assassinated?
Yes.
Oh, the day that we landed on the moon? Or the day he was assassinated?
The year that he was assassinated, 68?
I am not sure. He was assassinated in 1963.
63. Why can I never remember
that? Yeah, see, that's the thing. I'm the same exact way. I always think, for some reason, I always think 1969, landing on the moon, he must have been there, but he wasn't. But he was the guy that was like, we're going to land a man on the moon.
Right.
And so I guess I always just like,
exactly what it was like,
put it all together.
Yeah.
We're going to put a man on the moon.
Era.
And but so 2 years before that.
Okay, well, history, neither of our strong suits, but what do you know? I have a history question for you coming up later, so we'll see.
Oh, fantastic. Good.
But first, my first question for you is an etymology question that pertains to a particular interest that you hold, a hobby that you hold. Here's the question. What term for a financial windfall stems from a variation of poker popular in the mid to late 19th century?
Can I get that one more time?
Absolutely. What term for a financial windfall stems from a variation of poker popular in the mid to late 19th century? It is a term for a financial windfall that stems from a variation of poker popular in the mid to late 19th century.
Man, it's a good question. Financial windfall. Whenever I hear questions like this, I always wonder if I even know what the word or the term is or if I'd ever heard it. Seems kind of 50-50. Sometimes I'm like, never, like chiaroscuro. I'm like, never heard that before in my life. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, motherfucker. Yes.
This is a common term.
Yes. A financial windfall. A form of poker, a kind of poker, famous in the 19th century. What kind of poker is there? There's like 5-card and 7-card stud. There's Texas Hold'em. There's Omaha. And I don't know if I know other kinds as far as types of poker. I mostly just play Texas Hold'em, and that's all I really know.
That seems to be the most popular variation.
Oh, for sure.
What would you say the second most popular is?
I'd say like probably like 5-card stud or 7-card stud.
Do they have, is that as popular in terms of like the media attention? I know that, you know, there's, you know, poker tournaments are streamed and broadcast. Is there like a stud variation, like league or something, anything like that?
Omaha is very popular also. And I guess like, as far as like people that are very, very into poker, that might be the variation that's like the next most popular. I'm trying to think if there's something else like right in front of my fucking face that I'm just not thinking of. I guess I could work backwards and try and think of terms for a financial windfall. But I think I'll have more trouble there. Poker at mid 19th century. We're going to play some blah blah poker. um Man, I am drawing a complete fucking blank. This is when I miss having a guest.
Yeah. It could be helpful to have a sussing partner. Hopefully we'll have it. Yeah. Even though we're doing this remotely right now, we're working on bringing in some guests soon. So stay tuned.
Yes.
You must not suss alone forever, Mark.
Thank God. Thank Christ. I guess I'm going to go with... I'm like you. I hate putting in blank answers.
Mm-hmm.
When you say financial windfall, you mean like making a bunch of money, right?
That's exactly what I mean.
I'm going to say no limit.
I'm sorry, Mark, but that is incorrect.
Okay.
The answer is jackpot. Jackpot.
Huh, I've never heard of jackpot poker.
Okay, in the variation of jackpot poker, a player needs to have been dealt two jacks or better in their hand to bid at all. And if only one player is dealt a hand like this, they receive the jackpot, which I'm assuming is the blinds, you know, or the smaller pot that is there before the game gets started.
Never heard
of
that.
There's a humorous quote on the term from an article titled "The Young Men at Narragansett Pier," which appeared in the Cincinnati Daily Gazette, August 21st, 1876. The writer states, "One never sees these young men standing around bar rooms holding one end of a straw to their mouths and the other to a julep. They are never seen playing billiards for wine and cigars or passing out of the game in a jackpot when they hold a bobtailed flush. Indeed, like the reader and myself, they do not know what a jackpot is, unless it is a pot to put jacks in, which is sometimes the case." It's funny how it flipped. And now if you told somebody that they won a jackpot and you presented them with a pot full of fish, I think they would be rightfully miffed.
Huh.
So jackpot.
That's yeah.
That is where that term comes from. It is a variation of poker where you must have at least two jacks dealt to you or better to bid.
Interesting. Learn something today. Here's your second question.
Okay.
What is the closest U.S. state to Africa?
The closest U.S. state to Africa. Now, this is going to have... I feel like this is going to be, you know, a surprising answer. And it could be something like Maine, because even though it's so far north, you know, when you look at a map that has the globe flattened out, the distances between everything gets all mired. Things that are closer together get broader. So it could be something like Maine, where the... you know, the relative distance between the continent of Africa and U.S. state is shorter than what's typically presented on a map. And Maine is pretty far east. I believe it's the most eastern state, U.S. state. So I'm going to go with Maine.
Maine is correct.
Hey, all right.
Good job.
I think that was almost a perfect suss.
Yeah.
Nice. All right.
I would say so.
Well, Mark, I've prepared another question for one of your interests. This one dealing with alternative rock history.
Okay.
That's a favorite genre of yours, right?
I do like alternative rock. It's true.
From the 90s predominant. Well, not. I mean, is 90s your favorite alternative rock decade, or what do you think?
I mean, if we're going to say that 90s is when alternative rock first started, then I like 90s more than anything else, for sure.
Yeah, I would say it's what I cut my teeth on. 90s, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the question. Which 90s alternative funk rock band was originally called Trucking Company and grew out of a side project of blues travelers John Popper? What 90s alternative funk rock band was originally called Trucking Company and grew out of a side project of Blues Traveler's John Popper?
So John Popper was in this band.
Mm-hmm.
And then the band left John Popper and did its own thing.
John Popper left to pursue the Blues Traveler group and focus on that, but originally played harmonica for the Trucking Company. And after after Popper left, they added two other band members, and that became the classic lineup of this 90s alternative funk rock band, who technically formed in 89, but they came to prominence in the 90s.
Hmm.
Had their debut record in the 90s.
Interesting. I do not know this at all. It would be helpful to know where I guess John Popper's from and where Blues Traveler's from, I guess, if they're from the same place. I think Blues Traveler's from Virginia, but that might be wrong.
All of these groups 90s. Are from the northeastern United States, all of the major players involved.
Yeah.
As a hint, I'll give you that.
90s funk rock band.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I can always suss backwards and try and think of 90s funk rock bands. There's some pretty obvious ones that it's not. 311, funk rock band from Omaha, Nebraska, famously.
Do you think Bright Eyes and 311 will ever collaborate? Aren't they from the same area?
I hope not. God, I hope not. Please don't let that happen.
The mashup no one wanted.
Yeah, right. Something that no one's asked for. It's not Red Hot Chili Peppers. They started way before that, I think. 90s funk rock band. They were together in the 80s. Funk rock. Then you start getting into bands like Incubus, I guess. Could be Incubus. They're from California.
Incubus featuring John Popper on harmonica is also kind of a funny mental image.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, old Incubus stuff sounds way closer to Primus.
Yes.
If you listen to like Science and stuff like that. So
A Fungus Among Us, I believe their pre-label record.
Yes. 90s funk rock bands. With harmonica. Trucking Company. Damn. You're making me look like a damn fool.
I stumped you twice. Not to gloat or anything. But I thought, you know, there's a chance that Mark knows this, and there's maybe a chance that he doesn't either.
Yeah, no, I have no fucking clue.
So John Popper and the vocalist of this band were friends in high school.
Mm-hmm.
They reunited. The vocalist played some songs.
I'm going to say Blind Melon.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mark, but that's wrong. Good guess, though.
Okay.
That is a great guess.
Thanks.
Are they from Seattle or no? Where's Blind Melon?
I'm not sure
from?
Where they're from.
Great band, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Funky.
The band in question would be the Spin Doctors. Doesn't that just make sense? Can't you hear John Popper over that band?
It makes too much sense.
Yeah.
It makes too much fucking sense.
So vocalist Chris Barron and John Popper were high school friends. And when Chris Barron went to college in, I think, New Jersey, he was in some bands called Dead Alcoholics with Boners. and Fun Bunnies. And shortly after being involved in those bands, he wrote the songs Jimmy Olsen's Blues and Two Princes, which he played for John Popper. And Popper was like, you need to move to New York and live with me and we'll do music together. And that was kind of how Barron got involved with the Spin Doctors. Popper soon went on to, work primarily with Blues Traveler. And that's kind of where the split happened. But both bands obviously becoming very successful in the 90s.
Yeah, great. I'll be honest. I'm kind of happy I didn't know that.
I know you're not a John Popper. You like ripping on John Popper for his creepy tweets.
So. Make no mistake about it. John Popper as a musician is
phenomenal.
Like, he should go down in history as one of the best harmonica players mm-hmm. in history.
Yeah.
Played on What Would You Say, the famous Dave Matthews Band song, you know. Great.
But he's also an internet troll.
A complete creep. Yeah, he's also a fucking weirdo, so there goes that. Are you ready for your last question of this round?
Yes.
American Sniper is a movie based around the experiences of the deadliest marksman in U.S. military history. What was his name?
I never saw the movie, but I am familiar with the story, and he was murdered at a gun range, I think, in a sad dose of irony, I guess. His name was Chris. Ooh. I got that jackass Chris Matthews name in my head. It's not him.
Welcome to Hardball. I'm Chris Matthews. I spiked a little bit there.
Chris.
my Chris Matthews spikes.
Chris.
I'm Chris Matthews. Let's play Hardball.
Hey, what's going on? Let me say something that can be at least perceived as insensitive, and I don't care, and I'm not going to apologize for it, okay?
COVID-19, should we just be letting people die? I'm Chris Matthews. Let's play Hardball.
I think his first name was Chris, and his last name... I feel like this is almost a perfectly timed trivia question because it's just outside of the zeitgeist. And so you're relying on the memories of like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, you know? I'm sad that I don't know his name. Chris, Jennings. No, Chris,
physical
I'm blanking
pain.
On it. Chris, I'll submit Chris Jennings, but I know that that's wrong.
The correct answer is Chris Kyle.
Chris Kyle. Chris Kyle.
Chris Kyle. Yes.
Yes. And I guess I should check out that movie. Have you seen it?
I have not. No. Mm-hmm. I've heard mixed reviews on it. I know it's very propaganda-ish from what I've heard. I don't want to get into the politics of it, but,
right.
You know.
A lot of these military movies, I think, are secretly funded by the military.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's a very fucked up story, you know, one way or another.
Yeah.
No matter how you slice or dice it. So, ooh, you slipped. Never catch me slip, because if I slip, then I'm slipping. But if I got my Nina, then you know I'm straight tripping.
What is that?
That's Dr. Dre, my friend.
Oh, I should have known it was Dre. Your third favorite.
Oh,
rapper.
That should have been your next question. He's up there. I didn't do those in order.
Oh,
that would
okay.
have been too hard.
Gotcha. Right on. All right, Mark, it's time for your redemption for round one. Let's see if you can get this question about movie musicals right. Oh, where's Jamie when you need him?
Seriously.
Who plays
Not 6 feet away?
Who plays the Madam Miss Mona? In a 1982 musical film alongside actors Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise, which follows the story of a revived bordello named the Chicken Ranch. Who plays Madam Miss Mona in that 1982 musical film?
I mean, what the fuck? I'm just going to, I mean, I have no other choice but to guess the one woman that was like around Burt Reynolds constantly. I know Burt Reynolds did, I think he did a good amount of movies with Dom DeLuise around the same point. I got to remember her name. I think it's Lonnie Anderson. So I'm going to have to guess Lonnie Anderson.
No, Mark, I'm sorry. The answer is actually Dolly Parton. And the movie musical would be The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
In Texas.
Yes.
God damn. You know, I almost asked you a question about that.
Oh, really?
Same musical.
Huh. Which, do you remember the question?
I don't off the top of my head. I'll try and remember it.
Because I was just reading about it. So I might know.
Obviously.
One little extra bit of trivia that I found about that movie. Burt Reynolds suffered a double hernia during the making of that film while lifting up Dolly Parton during a dance move.
Oof.
I'm not sure if it was during a dance move, but he was attempting to lift her and double hernia.
It was during a dance move.
Hey-o.
If you know what I mean.
Mark's busting out.
I believe they call
there.
That the horizontal mambo is the dance move they were doing, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Are you ready for a break?
I am ready. I am ready.
Let's do it then. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back with some miscorrections. Do we have any of those?
We got one miscorrection and a couple no notes.
Beautiful. And then a second round of a fresh batch of hot questions for you.
Can you smell it? So we're back here, and since we're doing some miscorrections and no notes, Mark, why don't you do no notes and I'll do missed corrections, because the delay is going to mess it up anyway. Let's just see what we get.
Okay.
All right. Miscorrections.
No notes. That's going to be horrendous. As a matter of fact, that's going to be so bad. Let's just try it again. Are you ready?
Sure.
All right.
Miscorrections.
No notes. Now, I'm going to tell you this.
Yeah.
That sounded way better to me. We were right on. So I feel like with the lag and stuff, you can probably make that right on top of each other.
We'll see what we can do.
But as you get it, it will probably be just a complete fucking wreck.
We got two takes. Maybe we'll put
Oh, the first one is just garbage.
Can't wait.
Keep it in there, but yeah. Trash.
All right. We have a nice comment from Clayton in our Facebook group. Clayton writes, dudes, you guys sounded great on our last episode, episode 90, our first remote episode. And we're funny as ever. Hope you keep doing this for the foreseeable future. Hearing you guys was a relief from all the craziness. Keep on sussing. I love that.
Yes.
We need keep on sussing t-shirts, I think.
Keep on sussing in the free world.
Mm-hmm. Maybe like Clayton, or keep on trucking like the Crumb cartoon. We can have like a guy. Like we could be doing the big walk. Wow, those are nice. Mark just put on some shades here. Very pretty.
They're very scary eyes.
I'm comforted, actually.
Clayton and his lady just had a baby too.
Congratulations. So.
Yes. Big news.
We also heard from Gil.
It's Gil.
Gil's checking in. Gil says, I just said bless you to Mark while listening to the latest episode. I may need some actual human interaction soon. True.
Thank
buddy.
You, Gil.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
And be sure to join us on Twitch, Gil. And in Mark's trivia this Wednesday, Nice Gets Pizza trivia.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that we'd get some Gil and Nicole and Francisco action. His little family over there in the Melbourne area. But no dice.
Time to join up, guys. You smarty pantses. Yeah. And then we have a missed correction from Andrew. Andrew writes, in reference to the first question of the week's episode, the character in Get Smart is named Maxwell Smart, not Frank Smart. And then posted the missed it by that much gif, which is a referencing a classic line of Get Smart. I thought that I had said that, but I guess I didn't. Not Frank Smart, like I had erroneously guessed Maxwell Smart, the name of that character. And we have a no note from Team Captain Aaron. Aaron states, small interesting nugget on the Star Trek question in the most recent podcast. In Futurama's episode, The Problem with Pobblers, the crew lands on a planet in search of food. Leela gets a reading from the thing on her wrist saying that it is a type M planet, so there should be at least some Roddenberries. I got the question immediately because the episode just happened to be on before me switching over to podcasts. Great episode, as always. Stay safe and FaceTime your loved ones.
Haha. That's awesome. What timing.
Right? So thank you, Aaron, Clayton, Andrew, and Gil for your comments, missed corrections, and no notes. If you'd like to write us with a missed correction, a rate my question, or even just a little no note, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com or find us on social media. Also, please take a second to rate us on your podcast service. If you haven't, those reviews really help. And if you've already done so, or you can't leave us a review because there's no review section on what you use, shares on social media are always appreciated.
And honestly, what else are you doing?
Yeah, it's time. Now is the time.
Now's the time. I mean,
five stars.
I will say that now is the time that people, I mean, if there's any time that I've known people that are friends of mine that are listening to a large abundance of podcasts or starting new podcasts, now is the time they're doing it. So if you know anybody who listens to podcasts that might be interested, and you like us and you want other people to listen to us too, now is the time to convince people. We'd appreciate it.
And come hang out with us at our streaming trivia. We've talked about it a lot. Do it.
Yes. All right. And there's a reason for it. All right. You ready for round two?
I am. Are you ready for round two?
I'm ready as I'm ever going to be. Hit me.
All right. We're gonna kick it off with a retro video games question. This is one I was gonna ask you last week, I think, but I opted for a different question. But I kept it around for you, kept it warm, and I'm looking for multiple answers here. Okay. Name the four characters introduced in 1993's Street Fighter II: The New Challengers.
No idea.
Really?
Yeah. Street Fighter 2. Oh. For some reason, I was thinking Double Dragon. In
1993's Street Fighter 2, The New Challengers.
Okay. Shit.
What you got?
Well, I don't know. 1993?
Mm-hmm.
Shit.
You're a Mortal Kombat guy, really, right?
Well, no. I mean, I was very into Street Fighter.
Okay.
I just don't know. You know, there are loads of different eras of Street Fighter. I mean, they just started adding mad motherfuckers.
That's true.
You know, there is one point where they added, you know, when they added Vega and M. Bison and all them. There's one later when they added Cammy and all them, but I think when they added Cammy and stuff, see, that may have been when it happened, and that's kind of when I got out of it.
Let me read you the question one more time.
Okay.
Name the four characters introduced in 1993's Street Fighter II: The New Challengers.
Well, and that's what I'm trying to, because I remember, like, I think Cammy was like a character that was introduced. But I can't remember if Cammy was introduced in 1993. I mean, there was, you know, Halsim and what's his name? Baraka. And then they were introduced in a game, but I can't remember when it was. When was 1993? I was 13. I guess I was playing video games quite a bit because I was a 13-year-old. I was in middle school.
You were 13 years old and video games were available to you in society, so you played them.
Right. I mean, well, I wasn't playing music yet. When I started playing music, video games like went out the window.
I see.
That's when it was like, oh, okay, well, all my spare time is going to seeing my friends and playing music with them, you know. When I met Mike and, you know, got like really, really more into music. So 93 is either like the Cammy era or it was like before the Cammy era. This may be when they did, what was his name? The guy that was supposed to be, M. Bison, or not M. Bison, but the boxer that was supposed to look like Mike Tyson. And that might be why you're asking this question, because it's all like intertwined with that. Because I remember you asking a question, or we had talked about that. What was his fucking name? Oh, Jesus Christ. My brain has just turned to mush with this vacation.
It's funny because I feel like you're like standing in front of me showing me your mind palace on like Street Fighter and video games right now. You're like, I got this dusty old piece of paper. You know, this is this character. This says 93. I'm not sure if that label's accurate.
Yeah, basically. It's like a couple of like, busted ass filing cabinets with like spiders crawling out of them.
Information's mostly correct. It's mostly right.
Right. I'm like piecing together stuff that I know is right. I just don't know. Like, I'm really bad with time. Like, right. I'm really bad with gauging time and distance. Like, anything that, you know, is used to, you know, do important things like judge, like, you know, how far away something is, whether it be like time wise or distance wise.
Yeah.
Cammy. Is Cammy later?
I'm gonna do you a favor, Mark, and I'm gonna give you a hint. Just to kind of narrow Cammy. Just to narrow you in here. This is the Cammy class. So can you name the three other characters that debuted in Street Fighter?
It is the Cammy class.
Alongside Cammy of
was Cammy. 2013? Fuck.
1993.
Sorry, when I was 13 is what I meant to say.
Gotcha.
God. See, this is a troublesome class for me. Troublesome group. Is that Boxer one of them?
No, he was in Street Fighter 2, which came out in 1991.
He was in regular
boss.
Street Fighter 2.
Yep. And his name is Balrog.
Balrog.
Yep. In America, anyway. That's the character's name. In Japan, M. Bison.
M. Bison.
Mm-hmm.
For Mike Tyson. See, that Balrog group, that's like the last group that I really knew. I remember seeing Cammy in the arcade in Edison Mall and being like, oh, she's hot.
Yep. It seems like they were like, let's just make Chun-Li, but she's British, not American. British Special Forces.
Close enough.
Yeah.
I mean, British is even hotter because they have an accent.
Right.
That's
right.
That's correct. Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that, but sure, why not?
You know, I don't know if I can think of anyone else.
Yeah, the other three are all men.
Of course they are.
And they're hot men, Mark. They're hot men. They deserve credit, too.
Yeah, I'm just going to have to go with a no on this.
Okay. You have T-Hawk, which was a Native American combatant fighter. Fei Long, who was Bruce Lee analogy. And DJ, who was Jamaican. Those were, and Cammy, of course, who we mentioned. Those were the four challengers in introduced in 1993's Street Fighter II, the new challengers.
Do not remember the familiar? Asian guy at all. The who? Jamaican guy, the Asian guy, I don't remember at all. What did you say his name was?
Fei Long.
Fei Long.
And
don't
he was
remember
a Bruce Lee clone, basically.
Yeah. DJ sounds familiar.
He had yellow pants.
And the Native. Yep. And the Native American guy, I remember seeing and being like, oh, wow. Like, even back then, it was like, good. Like, thank God they're actually fucking.
He had really cool
Native
attacks,
American
too.
People.
He had like a like an air attack. I think they might have introduced or a new mechanic with him. I might be getting that wrong. Somebody miscorrect me on that. But yeah, man, I'd love to go back and play some of those now.
All right. Well, I'm pooped. You want to just wrap this up?
Sorry, man.
No.
Not it's trying fine. To exhaust you.
No, you're good. Here's your first question in the second round.
Okay.
What are the names of the two tunnels that connect Manhattan with New Jersey under the Hudson River? Have you ever been in New York City?
Yes, I have. Before, yeah? And I've driven through one of these tunnels. When we were on the Temple of Yog tour, it was my driving shift as we were heading into Manhattan. And we went under, I think the other one is maybe the Lincoln Tunnel. So I'll put that to the side. That's one of my answers. And then the one that I actually drove through that I'm having trouble remembering, I think is named after another president, maybe the Hoover Tunnel, or maybe I'm thinking of the Hudson River. It goes under the Hudson River. It doesn't go under the Hudson River, does it? No. It's not the Hoover Tunnel. I really don't think it is. See, my memory of that whole drive is tainted by the fact that I had to pee so bad and we were stuck in traffic in this goddamn tunnel. And I had a bottle and I said, gentlemen, please avert your eyes. I must do this. I have no choice. And I have a shy bladder, so I couldn't. I was just sitting there in pain.
Oof,
and then when we finally made it through the tunnel, I saw a CVS. And we were at a red light, and I just like said, Louis, you take over. I got to go. I'll meet up with you guys at the venue. Jumped out of the car. And barely avoided pissing my pants. I made it into the bathroom in the CVS, which in New York City alone, finding a bathroom to use is a huge undertaking. But
oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Did
I
you have to buy
my
something?
Bladder's discipline. No, I didn't.
Wow.
Thankfully.
New York is like the home of bathrooms only for someone using, you know, buying something.
Yeah, yeah. I did once tell a pizzeria in New York that I would buy something after using their bathroom. And to be honest, I did a piss and dash.
Jesus Christ, man.
I had to do it to him. I didn't have any money at the time either, and I really had to go. And
damn,
you know, it seemed better than going in the street.
Shorty did it to him.
Anyway, yes, I've been to New York. The Hoover Tunnel is my second wrong answer. What do we got?
The correct answer, the Lincoln Tunnel is correct, and you were so close. The Holland Tunnel.
Oh, is the one Holland Tunnel.
The Holland Tunnel.
Okay. All right. Man, so close and yet so far.
So right. Close no matter how far.
Now it's time for your history question, Mark, of the quiz. Good. U.S. history. Which and this is you gave me a quote question last week, so I wanted to return the favor and give you a famous quote question. maybe a bit less inspirational than the Hemingway one that you selected, but here it is. Which U.S. president and former governor of Cuba and the Philippines left office in 1913 after losing re-election, stating, "I'm glad to be going. This is the lonesomest place in the world." Which president was that? Once governor of Cuba and the Philippines, left office in 1913 after losing re-election, stating, "I'm glad to be going. This is the lonesomest place in the world."
I wish I was better at history. And I'm decent with my presidents. But I always get so murky around this era.
In lieu of our difficulty with the timeline, I'm going to do you a favor here, and I'm going to give you maybe the best known trivia fact about this president. Like, if you know anything about him trivia-wise, this is probably the thing that he's best known for being. He is the only person to have both served as U.S. president and as a Supreme Court as the chief Supreme Court justice. And maybe a Supreme Court justice at all.
Hmm. 1913.
Yep. So they had served through the 4 years prior. 1909 would be their first year in office, winning election in 1908.
Who are you? There's, I mean, the presidents around this time, talk about a rough fucking time to be president. And I will say, I hate Donald Trump, but what a fucking rough time to be president. Not that he didn't do some of this himself, but like, it's so crazy. You look at some times in history and you're just like, fuck. Like, to be running like one of the most powerful countries, like while this shit's going on, and to make these decisions. I've been watching Succession, HBO show with Brian Cox and a bunch of other people that aren't huge.
Kieran Culkin's
in it. Kieran Culkin's amazing in it. Have you watched it at all?
No, I haven't.
But even that, like just seeing like these people making these executive decisions in like one of the biggest like news outlets, you know, it's just like, God, and that's just like the news, you know, it's almost more impressive than being the president, you know. I remember there was one president, there was one question I asked you that was like, what president ran on the platform of like no more war? And then he won. And then there was like World War One or something. Mm-hmm. I think that was Herbert Hoover. And Herbert Hoover served right around the time. Herbert Hoover, I think, was after this, because I think he was, that was when they had like the Hooverville, all the tents and shit. And that was around the time. Yeah. And that was around the time of Black Monday or whatever it was. God damn it. Why can't I keep my president straight during this time? It's just like embarrassing. One term president.
Hey, man, we're all learning, you know, week to week. You and me, we learn new stuff every week that other people already know.
Here's the thing.
It's part of the job.
We learn short term, though.
Yeah, I mean, but it's, you know, it's piecemeal.
We learn it's, and it's gone.
And that is sadly one of the downsides of trivia is, yeah, you know, it's no replacement for actual like reading and studying and learning. It's not academia. We're here having fun.
Ain't that the truth? This was like right around the time of the First World War. or was during the First World War. He was also a justice, governor of Cuba
and the Philippines.
So bizarre. What an interesting guy.
While governor of the Philippines, saw a path to independence for the Filipino people and did not use any form of racial segregation, you know, while he was there, and really worked towards that. As far as that's what the history books say anyway. I wasn't there. I don't know, but.
Chester Arthur.
Ooh. You are, I don't know if you're close actually, but that's a good guess. It is another president that has three names, not Chester A. Arthur, but William Howard Taft. William Howard Taft.
Oh, man, the fat one.
Taft lost in part due to the fact that his old boss and friend, Teddy Roosevelt, ran against him in the election, splitting the Republican vote and allowing Woodrow Wilson to take over the executive office. Taft served as Roosevelt's Secretary of War, but functioned mainly as an advisor. He didn't really have a lot of power over the army. And sadly, in all of this, it's believed that Taft didn't even want to be president in the first place. He always wanted to be a Supreme Court justice, but his wife did not like hanging out with the Supreme Court justices and wanted to hang out with more of the Washington elite like Roosevelt. So they switched social circles, and that's how Taft got kind of put into national politics, ultimately becoming president and uttering that quote as he was leaving. I'm glad to be going. This is the lonesomest place in the world. But he did later achieve his dream of becoming a Supreme Court justice when he was appointed in 1921, then becoming the only person to have ever served as both a U.S. president and Supreme Court justice.
Huh. Also got stuck in the bathtub, apparently.
That is a rumor. There was a new bathtub installed in the White House for him, but I think the getting stuck in a bathtub is an unsubstantiated rumor. It's a it's a famous trivia-ism, though. That's one
word
of those
of
questions.
Mouth.
Right.
Yeah. Here's your next question. Uxoricide is the killing of one's what? U-X-O-R-I-C-I-D-E. Uxoricide is the killing of one's what?
Let's see here. Well, patricide and matricide would be father and mother, respectively. Siblings, brother and sister. I'm not sure what the Latin word for the act illustrated in the biblical story Cain versus Abel is. Brother side. Hermano side? Hermanos? Hermanoside? I don't know. So I don't think it's, I don't think you said uxoricide?
Uxoricide.
Uxoricide. I don't think it's brother or sister. I feel like if it was, I would recognize the word. So maybe
I hope I'm
be,
pronouncing that right.
It could be a cousin. It could be an aunt. It could be even something that's like maybe not even a biological boundary or binding, but like a pet or a friend or some other kind of relationship. But to have such a to have such a distinction, I mean, it, you know, the further that you get out from your family, I guess the more that you would just call it like homicide or murder. So I'm that's bringing me back. I think it's got to be somewhere in the family. Aunts and uncles become cousins at some point. Could it be a grandparent, a great grandparent? It's possible. But I'm going to go with cousin because people have a lot of cousins, and that leads me to think that there might be a term for it, and because I'm unfamiliar with it, maybe this is the one. Cousin.
The correct answer is wife.
Wrong. Oh, okay. Uxoricide. Okay, so it is a social relationship. I guess kind of a family relationship, too, in a way. Legally.
Familial.
Uxoricide. Oh, I hope that this quarantine, I've heard, you know, that the domestic abuse stats are going up right now. So chill out, people, you know, take care of yourself and take care of your loved ones and family and keep each other safe and love each other.
Yes, please. For the love of Christ. And Mark, if you see something, say something.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to protect each other now more than ever, I would say.
Yeah,
we're at a vulnerable point. Everybody is vulnerable right now, and we need to come together and protect each other.
Indeed.
All right, Mark, I have a physics question for you. How's your physics?
Not good.
All right.
We'll Nothing see. Is good. We're falling apart. Falling apart at the seams over here, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, it's I feel like, I don't know, a lot of your methods from, like, gaining trivia, you know, you do, like, an out-and-about type thing, like, things that, like, happen to you in real life, inspire thoughts that then you look up and research, and that's how you typically write trivia. So in coming up for questions for...
I'm rotting on the vine.
In coming up for questions for the streaming, what's been happening there? Have you still been maintaining the notebook, or are you just going back into the repository?
So for the last one, I came up with questions today, since you were at my trivia on Wednesday. I'm repositorying it, but I'm finding some good ones.
Okay,
pretty happy
cool.
with the stuff I'm finding.
Love the ones you've presented so far here on the podcast.
Thank you.
All right, here's your physics question. What is the term for the antimatter equivalent of the electron?
The antimatter equivalent of an electron.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, this is probably like beginner's physics stuff, but it's been a long time.
I'll admit I threw this in here mainly as a question for some of our listeners that are hungry for science questions that we haven't had in a while. But I'll tell you, antimatter, just as an aside, antimatter is any matter that has its electrical charges reversed.
Okay.
So that's just some extra information. I don't know if that's going to help you as a hint to this question, but what is the term for
Probably
the antimatter
not.
Equivalent of the electron?
An electron. I don't even know where to start.
How about in the medical industry? Have you ever heard of a PET scan?
Yes.
Okay. So one of those letters in the initialism for PET scan stands for the answer.
Is the correct answer positron?
That's right, Mark. It's positron. Good job.
See, now I know PET scan.
There you
go. That gave me what I needed.
Positron is antimatter that has been harnessed by science in order to create detailed 3D images of metabolic activity within the human body. PET scan.
I did not know that.
Positron emission tomography.
Huh.
Yeah. Now, interestingly, too, there's antimatter. There's like an antimatter fountain in the center of the Milky Way that has antimatter spilling out of it, and no one knows what creates it.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Things like that make me wonder what the fuck is really going on in the world. And
people look at it,
here.
Look at it and say, why, or I should say people, astronomers look at it and say, hey, why is that so bright? Oh, it's just antimatter and matter colliding and exploding and destroying everything in its path. Basically.
No big whoop.
So, yeah. But yeah, we've harnessed that ability for use in our medical industry in PET scans. Pretty interesting.
Very interesting. I'm going to give a question that I think you know the answer to.
but it's such a good trivia question. I have to ask it.
All right.
For listeners. Mr. Cat Poop was the Chinese translation of what movie? Mr. Cat Poop was the Chinese translation of what James Brooks directed movie?
Oh, I got a director out there. Okay, James Brooks.
Yeah, I'll give you the director. Now that you don't seem, I thought you knew this right off.
Mm-mm. James Brooks. I don't know James Brooks. And also, I did really poorly, along with my no-no compatriots at the Southwest Florida Movie Trivia League. I think we were all at the bottom of the leaderboard for a lot of those questions. Our movie trivia knowledge is not as strong as we thought.
Very tough.
James Brooks. I know Albert Brooks. Mr.
You
Cat
know Mel
Poop.
Brooks.
Mel Brooks. James Brooks. I'm sure I know some of his movies. Which one of those movies was translated to Mr. Cat Poop in Chinese? Well, let's see here. That does not sound like a mistranslation. So maybe the movie has Mr. in it, in the title. Could it be Mr. Bean? Is the word for bean, could that be mistranslated to cat poop and by going, translating into Chinese? That would be humorous. Rowan Atkinson obviously starred in that. I don't think he directed it though. So that could be an answer.
Saying something is humorous without laughing is in itself very humorous. That is humorous.
Ah, that is funny.
Ah, yes, humorous.
That I regard that with humor in my mind. Mr. Cat Poop. Mr. Deeds, the Adam Sandler movie. I don't think Adam Sandler collaborates with anybody named James Brooks. I don't think James Brooks is a part of Happy Madison Productions. Well, Mr. Cat Poop. Yeah, I don't know the answer to this. I guess I'll go with Mr. Bean. That will be my final answer.
This answer is so satisfying. The correct answer is As Good As It Gets.
What? Is
starring Jack Nicholson.
Right. There's a cat poop plot detail in the movie.
I don't know. I don't know why it was translated to Mr. Cat Poop. I don't know if he just like seems like because it's he's so like such a downer. So they just call him Mr. Cat Poop, like what a fuddy duddy, like, or whatever. But yeah, Mr. Cat Poop.
Oh man. Okay. So, yeah, I'm trying. It's been a long time since I've seen that movie. I'm trying to remember. There's Greg Kinnear has a dog in that movie, right? Doesn't he have a cute little dog?
He does. Yep.
Dogs like to eat cat poop. Is he the star in the Chinese version? Is he the main character?
No, I honestly, there's probably some information someone could write in. I mean, honestly, my gut just tells me that it probably has something to do with Jack Nicholson's character just being such a like downer and such a bummer that they just were like, well, instead of calling it As Good As It Gets, let's just call it Mr. Cat Poop. Like this guy is just like, just, you know, a pile of cat shit.
You know what you're getting into.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on. Hilarious question.
Thank you. That question is hilarious. That's the joke.
All right. Let's go ahead and take another break. And then we have a
rating
question.
It?
That's it.
Holy shit.
3-3.
This baby's flying by.
Oh, we're not done yet. Don't worry.
Oh, no, no, no. Oh, no, no.
More quiz coming soon.
out on the street, they call it murder.
Damien Marley.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Okay. I was thinking of Electric Avenue. Okay, we're back. Before we get to our final questions of the quiz, we have, of course, a Rate My Question to take a look at.
Rate My Question.
I did a Rate My Question.
Oh, I know.
Just for, again, perfect asynchronicity.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
All right. Our Rate My Question here comes from Ben. Ben writes, hello, gents. Fellow Quizmaster Ben here. My trivia partner, Patrick, and I have been creating and hosting for just over 7 years of weekly trivia. They do rounds, 10 questions a round. So 70 questions per quiz. Just thought I would send you two of my favorite questions that I've written. These questions are not too difficult, but I thought they were very clever. So these are the two cleverly worded questions that Ben has for us as far as Rate My Questions go. First up, Rick Allen single-handedly kept the beat for what 80s rock band? Rick Allen single-handedly kept the beat for what 80s rock band?
Ah, very clever.
Mm-hmm.
That would, of course, be Def
Leppard.
Yeah, okay.
So that's question number one. I feel pretty good about that, but it might be factually incorrect. And correct, because they had another drummer before him, right?
Nope.
He was the first drummer.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And their only drummer.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Got into a car accident,
for some reason, I thought that he was like...
arm.
Yeah, I remember that. And I know he's like... I just thought for some reason they started with a different drummer or something like that. And
not that I know of, no.
Okay. He's an original member. Well, my bad. I retract that then.
Very well done.
I have to say that is a fantastically worded question. And
yes,
in every way. Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. And it's great because, you know, this band member that not a lot of people necessarily know being in this band is tough, but that single-handedly, if you're paying attention, you know.
Clue nugget.
What percentage of people do you think know that the drummer from Def Leppard only has one arm?
Anybody who owned the album One Fierce Beer Coaster Hooray for Boobies by the Bloodhound Gang knows that.
Okay. Because
they scream that in the middle of what is the name of that song?
I can't remember, but I know that it is.
They sampled a Pac-Man beat or something like that. But I would say to answer your question, a lot of people would probably know that, but maybe not so many people in the generations that fall below millennials. I think millennials probably, there's not many Def Leppard Gen Z fans, I don't think. Or Gen Z Def Leppard fans, rather. So I think that question gets a little bit more difficult as time moves forward, but very cleverly written. And the second question that Ben submitted for us is as follows. Believe it or not, this was the world's first synthetic food. Believe it or not, this was the world's first synthetic food.
Hmm. And you knew this, huh?
Yes. Based on the clue. There's a clue nugget in here.
Yeah, believe it or
actually,
not.
Actually, I haven't looked this up, but I assume I'm right. Let's see if we can look it up real quick.
Okay.
And see if we can get I'd rather leave this with a concrete answer, but I feel pretty certain that it's probably margarine based on the clue, believe it or not.
Oh, I was thinking something with Ripley's. I was trying to think of like a Ripley food or something.
Yeah,
like
I don't
know
if they make any foods.
No,
it does recall Ripley's for sure, though, since that's typically where the phrase is. But yeah, let's see here. First synthetic food.
There's
a lot of stuff here about food coloring.
He did not put an answer with this.
No answer submitted, no. Thanks for nothing, Ben. No, these are, I like these questions. They're cleverly written.
They are. I probably have a couple of issues with this question.
What's up?
Well, I mean, provided that the answer is margarine, synthetic. I don't know how I feel about the word synthetic, and I don't know how I feel about the word food. I don't know.
A lot of the stuff when I search for synthetic, a lot of what's coming up here is like lab grown meat.
Right.
Which is all the rage right now.
Yeah. I think if margarine is the answer, which provided the cleverness of the Def Leppard question, it probably is, whether you find it or not. Mm-hmm. I would say it's a great question. It's a clever question. But my issue would lie with calling it a food. I'd maybe go so far as to call it a food stuff or like a food item or something.
Sure. I like food stuff.
Artificial, yes. Mm-hmm. Synthetic.
Yeah, I'm having trouble finding the answer here. So that in and of itself, I don't want to dock points just because I can't, you know, research it quick enough. But I agree. I think the premise is good, but maybe just reworking the last little bit would be a good idea.
And yeah, and this stuff with him kind of fits into something that I wanted to talk to you about, because I know we talked, you know, a pretty good deal, like in bits and pieces, but we've never really kind of like put it all in one place about, you know, ways of giving clues or like ways of, you know, through one method or another, finding a way to let people know kind of like a tip of the hat of what to expect for an answer or whatever. And I've kind of broken it down to four different ways that you can like do that.
Question structure.
Yeah. Question, or actually not even question structure, but also just your trivia structure. So for instance, one of them is to do questions based from easiest to hardest throughout rounds or throughout your trivia night, where you start off easy and you get harder. So, you know, right from the get go, the first question, you shouldn't really have to look much further than what is obviously right in front of you. You know, the questions are going to be pretty obvious. What are the names of the husbands on the Flintstones? You know,
yeah, I always try to make my first question of the quiz something that is like, if you don't get this, this is the freebo of the evening.
Right.
You might only leave tonight with 3 points.
Right.
This is the question. Yeah.
And that leads me to my second one, which is point allocation for questions. So, you know, having point allocation, if you're not doing the I can't remember what the term that everyone uses for like Wands trivia, where you're constantly putting, you know, an amount of points that you want to wager, but then you can't use that amount of points again. But when you allocate points yourself, you're saying, this is a 5-point question. 5 is as many points as I give. So this should be harder. If you think this is easy, then it's probably not, unless it's something that you would like ask specifically for. So that's,
yeah, or you have the specialized knowledge in the category.
Right. So that's the second way. The third way is to just give a bunch of information about a question. This is kind of like earlier when I asked you about Mr. Cat Poop. You know, initially I asked without the director. The second time I asked you the question, I added the director. If I had asked again and I had told you that that Jack Nicholson was involved, that would give you some more information. If I had told you Jack Nicholson and Greg Kinnear were involved, or that Greg Kinnear had a dog in it, the more information I give, the more likely you are to get it. And this is what we've talked about before, where, you know, a lot of teams will be like, if they know it based off of the smallest amount of information, they're like, stop, don't give any more.
Right.
I already know it. I don't want you to give any more information that will help someone else. And then, and then the last way is to give multiple ways to get to an answer. And the example,
yes,
and that's your favorite. That's where your bread is buttered, or margarine.
Yeah, it's like a crossover question. You're crossing over into two different knowledge bases.
Yes, yes.
You can use one to confirm the others, even.
So, like last week when I asked the first Academy Award movie, that's very, very hard. but then I said it shares a name with a sitcom from 1990 to 1997 starring Steven Weber. That gives you some more information. If you know a lot about television, then you'll know that it's Wings and you have the answer. Mm-hmm. So you can give, you know, multiple different ways to get to one answer.
Yep.
So I feel like those
are
the four
ways. Boy, if I knew
that
fact about the Academy Awards, that, like, if I knew that was called Wings, that would have been a very easy question.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
But it was just outside of my mind palace, you know, in each way.
Just out of range.
Yep.
But yeah.
It happens. Well, that's great. That's a great breakdown. I totally agree. And if you're a quizmaster and you're listening, you know, don't feel bad about, you know, taking a second look at some of your questions. The other thing I noticed about this believe it or not question, it's written in the Jeopardy format, you know, where it's looking for it says, believe it or not, this was the world's first synthetic food. Personally, I prefer the trivia questions to be like in a question format, unless you're doing specifically like a Jeopardy style game. So that would be the only other criticism I would have for that. But overall, like these questions from Ben, and great examples of what you were just talking about, Mark, in your breakdown. So thank you for that.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, the Jeopardy wording never bothered me. I'm kind of fine with whatever. I feel weird sometimes.
To me, it's just grammatically incorrect because there's a question mark on the end usually. And it's, you know, without the prompt of answer in the form of a question, it's just, you know, we all know Jeopardy, so we all get it. But, you know, I just think, you know, for the art form of quiz writing,
yeah,
this is you'd probably want to form it in a question.
It's funny.
But yeah,
because whenever sometimes I'll do spell something and I'll tell people mm-hmm. to spell something and I'll feel weird about it. I'll be like, I feel weird not asking. I'm telling.
Right. Yeah. But that's the thing. If you have a period on the end, I accept it. But if it's written as a statement with a question mark, so it's believe it or not, this was the world's first synthetic food.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe a little restructuring there. But Ben continues, thanks again for the trivia podcast. Trying to stay up to date and catch up at the same time. Was turned on to you by a friend about 2 weeks ago. Thank you for the questions, Ben, from Trivia with Ben and Patrick. You can find them on Facebook.
Very wonderful. Thank you, Ben.
All right. I think it's time for our final questions of the quiz.
Indeed it is. All right. Do you mind if I go first?
Please do. I think it's your turn.
Because I found this bad boy and it was too sweet to pass up. I just happened to be looking through my repository and came across it. Richard Attenborough.
Oh, our old friend.
Brother of documentarian David Attenborough. I know you are. Played Kris Kringle in what famous movie?
I know this.
Do you?
I do. He played Santa in the 1990s remake of Miracle on 34th Street.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding.
I think just before he was in Jurassic Park, probably my first ever awareness of Richard Attenborough in that movie.
Your first Attenborough sighting.
My first Attenborough sighting. There he is, Richard Attenborough.
There he goes.
The beautiful brother of David.
Here you'll see him in his
natural environment. Watch as he breaches the surface to put on his Kris Kringle outfit.
Perfect.
All right. My last question for you for the quiz is the category is drinks, soda drinks specifically, though.
Soda drinks.
Here's the question. Named after an ancient civilization, which yellow soda is the best-selling soda drink of the country of Peru? So as you might know, Coca-Cola dominates the market in most countries, but not in Peru. Named after an ancient civilization, which yellow soda is the best-selling soda drink of Peru?
I think I know this.
Okay.
just because somehow I've been to like the World of Coca-Cola or whatever in Atlanta. And I don't know if that's where I saw this, but I remember seeing a drink called Inca Cola. And I know Inca is an ancient civilization, so I'm going to go with Inca.
That is correct, Mark.
Oh,
great job.
Thank Christ.
Yes. So Inca Cola was they found success in marketing based on national identity of Peru. In a New York Times interview, Rafael Garcia explained, "I drink it because it makes me feel Peruvian. I tell my daughter, this is our drink, not something we invented overseas, or not something invented overseas. It is named for our ancestors, the great Incan warriors." Now, there was a bitter war with Coca-Cola on the way up. Even McDonald's switched sides to offer the soda that matched its famed golden arches over Coca-Cola, which they're known for selling. However, after attempting to buy out its rival, Coke agreed to buy out just a 50% share of its rival for $300 million in 1999, also taking control of Inca Cola's overseas marketing and production. So yes, Mark, you probably did try Inca Cola at the World of Coke. And I think it's also available, was available at the soda spot in Walt Disney World at Epcot. So in 1999, Coca-Cola CEO M. Douglas Ivester traveled to Lima to announce the agreement. And in a symbolic act, Ivester drank a glass of Inca Cola at a press conference where he is rumored to have muttered, "Looks like pee, tastes like bubblegum." If I remember correctly, it did look like pee and it did taste like bubblegum. Inca Cola to this day continues to dominate the Peruvian market. It is seen as a status drink. However, there are some traditional Peruvian drinks that remain popular, which includes chica morada, made by boiling dark purple corn with spices and fruit and sweetening it with unrefined sugar, as well as another traditional drink, chica de jora, a mash beer made of white corn and often flavored with fruit and sugar, both ancient traditional drinks. So to me, that seems to be the three national drinks of Peru: chica morada, chica de jora, and Inca Cola.
Chica morada. I wonder if that means. I think that means.
I'm sorry. I mispronounced all the way through. Chicha morada.
Okay.
Chicha morada and chicha de jora. Man, I almost had a good run there.
You were doing so
but
good.
I mispronounced those.
Fair enough.
Don't miscorrect me on that. Chicha morada is the purple corn, and chicha de jora is the mash beer made of white corn.
Chicha morada must mean purple corn, because morada means purple. Gotcha. Yes.
Yep.
Now it all makes sense.
All right. So, Mark, can't call it a goose egg. You pulled it together there at the end. You got one.
Get that big one. So excited.
That's pretty good, though. I think this is a great episode, in my opinion.
Feel good about it.
Not to toot our own horn or anything, but I think we're getting the hang of this remote recording thing. We'll see how those theme songs work out.
Let's not get a hang of it too much.
Yeah. So we're going to continue doing this and hopefully bring in some guests for you soon. But that concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name's Quizmaster Lee. Follow No Nonsense Trivia on social media and Twitch for our upcoming quiz streams. And thanks for listening. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media accounts with your friends. You can... I lost my place. Just want to make sure we're still recording.
I know. I saw you like look over at the computer and I was like, oh, shit.
I'm nervous now. You can support the No-No in several ways, the easiest by sharing this episode on your social media account with your friends. You can also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. And you can support us on Patreon by visiting our website, thenono.com, and clicking the support link at the top, which will take you to our Patreon page. Thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show, including our new Rumpelstiltskin Allison. And Mark, guess who increased their pledge this week? It's Gil.
It's Gil. Thank you, Gil. Thank you, Allison.
Yes, thank you, Team Captain Gil.
Team Captain.
And thank you also to our quiz daddies, Dylan, Tommy, and Tim. and our team captains, Kristen Fletcher, Rachel, Aaron, and David Holbrook to the third power, Gil now joining their ranks, and our proverbial light keepers, Manu, Mo, Nina, Michael, Matthew, Luke, Marissa, Justin, Hank, Nicole, Cooper, Sean, Brina, Carly, Chris, Elise, Josh, and Lucas. And thanks to our Rebel Snailskins, Paige, Kenya, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C.
Clorox.
Michael J.
Just stay home.
And Michael S.
Scrub your hands.
Scrub your hands. And if you'd like to write us with a rate by question or miscorrection, you can do so at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. Or give us a call. Give us a ringy-ding.
Yes.
At 1-929-356-6966. That's 1-929-356-6966. Who? Mike Jones. No No Trivia Podcast. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia. We also have a Facebook group that you can join as well, and you can interact with us there. Just go on Facebook and search for the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast to join us there. Finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service.
Five stars only.
Please.
Make sure you call us, especially if you sound sexy on the phone. You're like, I like your questions. They sound so good.
Yeah, if you're like, hey, I really like your questions.
Yeah, just keep that
shit. Skull. All right, until next time, No Nonsense listeners, have a great week. Stay home and stay safe.